Unfortunately, we had to quit before we could come to the full climax of Judah's speech in yesterday's episode. We are in Genesis chapter 44. We're going to start in verse 30 in just a few moments after I've recapped where we are at. The brothers had returned to Egypt the second time, bringing their brother Benjamin, just as they'd been told had to happen, by Joseph, whom they do not yet know to be Joseph. And things seem to go very well. Joseph invites them to his private residence, has dinner with them, shows them great honor and felicitous treatment. He even just pours all sorts of attention upon Benjamin. And then he sends them all away, only for them to be tracked down shortly after leaving the city and accused of stealing Joseph's divination cup. And Benjamin is the one whose property it is found in. And so he is brought back along with his brothers, and the situation stands that Benjamin is going to be kept as a slave for stealing this cup while all the other brothers are let go. Now, Joseph has constructed this whole scheme in order to test whether or not his brothers had changed their attitude toward their youngest brother since they'd sold him into Egypt, whether they would just simply abandon Benjamin in Egypt and go back and spin some sort of tale for their father and not worry about Benjamin. So when Judah stands up and recaps the whole story as he understands it up to this point, Joseph is paying particular attention to, no doubt, his facial expressions, his tenor of voice, the phrases, because remember, even though he's still using a translator between himself and his brothers, he doesn't really need that translator. He speaks Hebrew. He understands the Hebrew and the nuances that might be in the way things are phrased. So he's paying attention to all of those things as they come from Judah, who is acting as the leader of the brothers because he is the one who has the firstborn blessing upon him. He's the one that is going to be the head of the family after his father passes away. And so Judah finishes with such a sacrificial portion of his speech that Joseph gets the answer to his inquiry: have these men changed since they sold me into slavery? So let's read the very end of Judah's remarks, Genesis chapter 44, starting at verse number 30. Now therefore, as soon as I come to your servant my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. And your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant our father with sorrow to Sheol. So he says, basically, it will kill our dad if we don't bring our brother back safe and sound. Verse 32, for your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame for my father all my life. So Judah has guaranteed with his own life that Benjamin will be back. And since he's made that guarantee to his father, he then tells Joseph this, verse 33, "Now therefore, please, let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that I would find, the evil that would find my father." So Judah says, "I volunteer to stay and be the slave, so that my brother Benjamin can go home and be with my dad, because that's what my dad needs." And this is what tells Joseph that Judah has changed greatly in his attitude since he was part of the group that, first of all, was willing to let him die in a pit, and then later decided to sell him and did not listen to all his begging and pleading as he was being carted off as a slave to Egypt. I have a feeling that Joseph was also paying attention to the way that his other brothers were acting during all of this, how they were agreeing with what Judah was saying, how they were emotionally and visually engaged in the offers that were being made by Judah. Perhaps some of them had even said, "No, I would stay. I would be willing to stay." And it's because of this that Joseph now knows it's time to tell them who he really is. But first he has another breakdown. Verse 45, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, 'Make everyone go out from me.' So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it." So this time he doesn't try to leave the room. He just lets himself go. And he's crying. And about the only thing that he can get out is to his servants, "Clear the room. Everyone out except these men." Now, he says those words in Egyptian, so the brothers wouldn't have understood that. All they would have seen is that this vizier, this ruler in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh, begins to cry and say things, and then everybody leaves except them. And he keeps on crying for a little bit. Apparently, it is so loud and amazing that the servants start reporting it outside of their own household into the house of Pharaoh himself. Now comes the time of the reveal. Joseph said to his brothers, and this time I believe he probably shifts straight to Hebrew, and everything here is directly to them. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" Now, he's already asked that question earlier and had it answered in the affirmative, but this time I think it's got that intensiveness to it, as in, you're not lying to me. He really is still alive, isn't he? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They are caught flat-footed. They are upset. They are actually, the Hebrew word has the idea of being terrified. They are shocked and amazed and scared, speechless, that the man who is standing before them is claiming to be their brother that they sold into slavery. Now, they had probably written him off a long time ago. When they sold him into slavery in Egypt, they did not expect that he was ever going to be able to get out of slavery very easily, that perhaps he might even have died a slave. That never in a million years would they have imagined that he could work his way up to the second most powerful person in the kingdom. So Joseph then said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And so they came near. And he said to them, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." And I think there's more than just the words here. I think he gathers them close to himself and is effectively saying, "Look at me. Look into my eyes. Look at my face. Yeah, I was 17 when you sent me away, but I'm in here." And all of us have experienced this in some form or fashion where we've met somebody we haven't met, we haven't seen them for decades. And they tell us who they are. And for a few moments, we stare at them, we look at their face, and then suddenly, in more cases than not, it breaks. And we see that younger person hiding inside of those wrinkles or behind that gray hair. And it suddenly becomes real to us who we're really talking to. And I think that's what he's trying to bring them to, is to really understand he is their brother. And more importantly, he's not mad at them. He is not trying to get even. That all of this stuff, this theater, this drama that he's taken them through for the last year, it all had a purpose to make sure that they were different now than they were back then. Verse 5, "Now, don't be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." So he has come to the conclusion that he was exactly where he needed to be for the security of his family. That he needed to work his way up to this particular point in history to save his family from starving to death in Canaan. It is a Romans 8:28 reality that God is able to work together for good, all things, for those who love him and who are called according to his purposes. So he believes God used the circumstances of their hatred toward him, their anger toward him, their willingness to sell him into slavery. God used all that to save them. And honestly, folks, that's exactly what happened with Jesus. God knew that sending Jesus in the time that he sent him, which was the most optimal moment in history, that Jesus was not going to be responded well to by the leadership, and that circumstances would result in them hating him and wanting him dead so badly that they would twist themselves into legal pretzels in order to get him crucified. But knowing all of those circumstances would come about, God used it in order to accomplish the atonement at that moment in history. God can always work things out to the benefit of those who love him and want a relationship with him. And so Joseph is being very good in his attitude, and he wants them to adopt that same attitude. Verse 6, "For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest." So we've got 5 more bad years where even if you do plant, you're not going to get much of a return. And so God, he says, sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and a lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. So Joseph says, I'm here because God wanted me here. I even provide good, solid advice to the Pharaoh. He treats me as someone that needs to be listened to. And so this is what he tells them he wants done next. Verse 9, hurry, go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. Now, the land of Goshen, we'll talk a little bit more about this later, was the southeast fringe of the Nile Delta. So it is the part of agricultural Egypt that is closest to Canaan. And it is a very good place to live. And so he tells them, that's where I'm targeting to put you and for you to live safely there. Now, Joseph seems to be somewhere near where the city of Cairo is, perhaps, somewhere in that general vicinity. You've got the city of On, which later gets called Heliopolis, that is not very far from where the Nile splits into several different rivers that feed through the Delta region. And so the headquarters of many of these Egyptian regimes is right there in that general vicinity, because it's so easy to administer the entire Delta and then upriver along the ribbon of the agricultural area for the Nile from that particular location. The pharaoh that is currently on the throne, Senusret the second, is working hard at developing the Fayum oasis that's a little bit south and west of where I'm talking about, where the delta starts to spread out. So where he's going to put them in Goshen is not terribly far from the center of power for this particular dynasty of Egypt. Verse number 11, there I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. So he's got 5 more years, he says. That's why you guys can't stay in Canaan. You need to get up here to the Delta area where you will be better off. Verse 12, and now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. Now, imagine how Benjamin is taking this all in. He likely does not have any personal memories of his older brother Joseph, because Benjamin was only probably about a year or so old when Joseph was sold into Egypt. So everything that he's only heard from his father, and maybe a few things from his brothers, and probably not very much from his brothers, because they would be feeling guilty about selling Benjamin's older brother into slavery. And dad may have not talked an awful lot about him, because it would bring a lot of heartache because he was no more. And so now Benjamin can see his big brother and know that his big brother wants to take good care of him. So it's my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and of all that you've seen. Hurry, bring my father down here. And then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them, and after that his brothers talked to him. So it's a great big family reunion, a lot of tears of sorrow and regret, but also a lot of tears of relief and joy and happiness that this is going to be good for everyone, to be able to go and let Dad know that Joseph still is alive, which means, by the way, they're going to have to fess up. They're going to have to tell the rest of the story and shame themselves in the process. But it will be worth it for them to bring the whole family together once more. And so they talk about all those sorts of things, probably about their families and how they're going to arrange all of these things. And that's when Pharaoh kind of gets involved. When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, Joseph's brothers have come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. No doubt Joseph has shared his story with the Pharaoh. But the story was that his brothers hated him so much, they sold him into slavery, and Joseph really didn't feel that he wanted to go back there and try to risk things with his brothers in order to see his father. But now all of that is moot, because now he has been reunited joyfully with his brothers, and he knows his father's still alive. And so the Pharaoh said to Joseph, verse 17, say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go back to the land of Canaan. Take your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the lamb. Now, the fat of the land. So Joseph has already told them where he wants them to live. And the Pharaoh is basically saying, I want you guys to come here and be happy, be safe, and Joseph to take good care of you. And you, Joseph, are commanded to say, do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. So Pharaoh's offer is, don't even worry about your stuff. Now they will, they're going to bring their things. But the Pharaoh says, don't even worry about your worldly belongings, because if you come down here to Egypt, you will be taken care of. Because all of Egypt looks to Joseph as their savior. And any family member of Joseph is going to be very welcome in the land of Egypt and treated with great honor. Now, they're still going to be held aloof because they're not Egyptians by birth, by genome, but they will be respected. He wants them to have the easiest move possible. So he sends a bunch of wagons so that people don't have to walk, the little kids, because all these guys have families. And he doesn't want Jacob to have to walk. So he makes sure that he's got himself something that he can sit in and just ride. And so now we move. The sons of Israel did. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh, gave them provisions for their journey. To each and all of them, he gave a change of clothes. So he gave every last one of them brand new clothes. And clothes were always considered to be something special. And to Benjamin, he gave 300 shekels of silver. The buying power of that based on shekels later, and I think that's a reasonable thing to look at. That means about 2 years' worth of wages. So we're talking about many tens of thousands of dollars of buying power here. And five changes of clothes. This is what I had in mind when I told you earlier that the five times as much on the plate was something Egyptian. Well, here's five times as many clothes as he gives to the other guys. To his father, he sent as follows. 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt. So specifically Egyptian delicacies or something of that nature. and 10 female donkeys with grain, bread, and provision for their father on the journey. So everything that he needs to make the move in comfort. And then he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, don't quarrel on the way. See, there's going to be a lot of recriminations possible here. The brothers might blame each other, and Joseph doesn't want that. He wants all of that left in the past. And so they went out of Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, Joseph is still alive. He is ruler over all the land of Egypt. And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So Moses zeroes in on the positive here, even though I think we can be fairly certain that these brothers had to explain to Dad, we lied to you. That garment, that special bit of clothing that we brought back blood-soaked and ripped up, we did that. That was goat's blood. That was sheep blood. We sold him into Egypt. We never would have imagined that he would come to prominence like he is now, but he is there, and he wants us all to move with him and to be safe there. And Jacob, Israel, does not focus on the negative. He only focuses on the positive. It's enough. Joseph is alive, and I'm going to go live with him, and I'm going to see him for the rest of my life. And it is, when we come back tomorrow, God's plan to have Israel make this move.